Welcome to Yara's Grow the Future podcast. Yara is the global leader in crop nutrition knowledge and a producer of quality fertilizer products. Grow the future with Yara.
Hello and welcome. I'm Ken Rundle, and in this podcast, I want to explore several issues around testing, whether that's plant tissue, including, of course, grain or soil, because rising up the farming agenda is our need to understand carbon. So to help me, I'm joined by John Telfer, Business Manager with Yara Analytical Services, and Dr. Peter Berry, Head of Crop Physiology with well-known independent consultants, ADAS. Now, testing is something we often advocate in these podcasts because of the significant management information it provides. I suppose, John Telfer, with harvest underway up and down the UK, it's grain testing that's been preoccupying the lab at the moment. How well is it going?
Well, after a bit of a stop-start, on-off beginning to harvest, thanks to that catchy weather we had in early August, I am happy to say that sampling season is finally well underway. We were getting a little bit twitchy here, kicking our heels, but now we're off and running. And yes, grain samples have started to arrive. We've had a few hundred over the past couple of weeks. At this stage, I think it's fair to say it's mainly trials samples that we are seeing as opposed to farm samples. And I had a little think about this, but I think we can probably maybe understand why this might be the case. It is a challenge for farmers to find the time, or even just to remember, to collect samples during what is their busiest and most critical time of the year. But if the time can be found, maybe by planning ahead and having sample bags prepared in advance, and by bring your agronomist in, they can help you get samples to the lab. If that challenge can be overcome and targeted grain samples can be collected, it can really pay dividends in giving you key insights into your nutrient management. And I'm sure Pete will expand upon this shortly. But our main activity at this time of year is always soil testing. As soon as the combines have cleared those fields, soil sample teams are on those stubbles collecting soil samples before winter drilling begins. And of course, whereas an individual field may generate one grain or seed sample, modern precision farming technologies mean that same single field can generate several soil samples. And for us at the lab in Pocklington, that can mean thousands upon thousands of samples arriving each and every day. So post-harvest, soils will always dominate, but grain testing should certainly not be forgotten.
Presumably, there's no problem about backlogs or blockages or anything like that. You're confident that farmers will get the results in good time.
Absolutely. No, we had a couple of hiccups due to sort of increased demand over the last couple of years and an explosion in interest in soil analysis, grain analysis and so on. But, significant investment has seen as back under control and it's business very much as usual now.
Pete Berry, ADAS is involved in handling the grain testing results from a number of different sources. So it's too early for this season, but what about any trends from the last very varied seasons we've had?
Yes, I mean, we've analysed all our grain analysis data over the last few years for wheat, and we found some really interesting trends. When we use it to estimate whether or not the wheat crops were fertilized adequately, and we actually find that for phosphorus, more than half of the wheat crops we looked at didn't appear to have sufficient phosphorus supply for them to achieve their potential yield. So we were really gobsmacked about that. And then when we look at some of the other nutrients as well, you know, we find that about a third of the crops looked to be deficient in sulfur, about a fifth of the crops were deficient for potassium, and a fifth of the crops deficient for nitrogen. Manganese was another interesting one, particularly for barley, where we saw a pretty high proportion of barley crops not getting enough manganese nutrition there. So some really interesting results, yeah.
And the results of that mean, okay, we've had some, if you like, fertilizer holidays with the high price, one or two farmers cut back for at least one, if not two seasons. Is that what you think happened, or is it worse than that in terms of people just not really paying attention to the condition of the soil?
Yeah, I think there's a number of factors potentially there. You're right that the sort of fertilizer holidays could play a part here, but part of it is just understanding what the supply of the nutrients are from your soil is and what the demand of a crop is for the nutrients as well. Such a variation in supplies from the soil of nutrients that it's easy to, just miss some of the fields which do need more nutrients than others. So it's important to sort of look at each field on a field-by-field basis to understand which ones are in greater need of nutrients than other fields.
So, John, this presumably gives us a hint that we should be really looking at things in the round. Yes, soil testing. Yes, grain testing, but tissue testing as well. In other words, all these bits of information feed on through, and then the important thing is to act on them.
Yes, Ken, absolutely. I'm going to be at risk here of repeating myself from previous conversations we've had, I feel, but the lesson hasn't changed. And we are now at the lab trying to present the tools we have at our disposal as having purpose and function at very specific stages across that crop calendar. Growing a crop and managing nutrition is a process that has a structured, ordered flow. So I see it just like a production line in a factory, or if you like, the preparation of serving food in a restaurant, or even our own lab preparing, analyzing, and then reporting. And in those scenarios, to ensure high quality and efficiency and identify opportunities to improve, you really have to examine and collect data and measurements at all stages within that flow. And growing a crop's no different. So it's important, I think, we start to link analysis and the data we accrue throughout the crop calendar. And the more data we generate, so at the planning stage, that means going beyond basic soil testing and looking at all nutrients, not just P and K, and getting additional soil health information, look not just at organic matter, but also biological activity and populations and so on. And the more data we get, the more shortfalls, deficiencies, and therefore opportunities we identify. And then from day one, that plan is your plan based on your needs. It's not just pulled from a standard program or just a repeat of what's gone before. And that soil data combined with the analysis of any on-farm or imported organic wastes and manures gives us our very best starting point from which we can plan our lime, our fertilizer, our manure management. We can look at where we might introduce more regenerative practices if needed. We can maybe even consider the use of nutrient-based seed treatments to give that emerging crop the very best start. But of course, as we've discussed before, you know, you can have a great plan, things can still go awry, you know, and you can still have conditions that impact on the delivery of nutrients to the growing crop. That could be the weather, it could be soil temperature, water availability, too much, too little, you know, disease pressure, weed pressure, acidity, compaction, and the list is almost endless. So the growing crop can be developing a nutrient deficiency despite your best plans.
We also firmly believe that both grain and tissue and soil analysis are really important. And I'll just give you an example, really. The grain nutrient analysis is a good way of telling you just whether the crop has sufficient supply of a nutrient. So, for example, for phosphorus, if the grain nutrient value for phosphorus is above 0.32%, then you tend to have enough phosphorus available to the crop. And we see so many samples with less than that threshold. Now, if you have your soil analysis as well, that tells you whether or helps you to understand whether that crop didn't have enough phosphorus in the soil, or whether it actually did have enough phosphorus in the soil, but the roots weren't enough to actually access that phosphorus. So, you know, having information about both the soil and the grain and the tissue testing does sort of go hand in hand to give you the best intelligence.
But for decades, soil testing has focused, as we've really reiterated, on key nutrients, N, P, and K. But as I outlined in my introduction, coming rapidly into focus is carbon.
Yeah, carbon's massively important, as we know. I mean, there's two elements we can think about here. The one element is the carbon associated with the fertilizer, which is used to fertilize the crop. And the other aspect of it is the carbon which can be sequestered and stored in the soil. So if you think about the first part first, and the amount of carbon emissions that are associated with fertilizer use, more than half of the carbon emitted in the production of a wheat crop, for example, is associated with the use of nitrogen fertilizer. And half of that comes from the actual sort of manufacture of the fertilizer itself, and half of it comes from emissions of nitrous oxide mainly upon application of fertilizer to the soil. So you got that aspect of it, and we know that testing is really important for fine-tuning or applications of nutrients, especially nitrogen, to make sure you're not over-applying and not increasing the carbon emissions in that way. I think in terms of the soil carbon, it's important to start understanding where you sit in your fields in terms of the soil organic matter content, which is a good indicator of a soil carbon content. So testing your soil to measure that is important. I think it's important to recognize that changes in soil organic matter and soil carbon occur slowly. So you can't expect quick changes. You've got to sort of measure trends through time, and you've got to be patient. And you've also got to recognize that different soils have maximum levels of soil carbon that they can actually store. And it depends on the clay content, for example, the climate. So soils with more clay or wetter climates can store more carbon than soils in drier climates or with less clay in them.
You used the term patience there. On the other hand, policymakers are trying to go for anything that at the moment is easy to measure and which can move farming towards a more environmentally representative business. Are they going to have the patience to deal with the kind of thing you've been talking about? Because as you say, it's a slow buildup of carbon, and they're trying to encourage people to build that carbon up in the soils. How do we get around that one? John, have you got any ideas?
I think what we can see improve quickly is things like soil health and an actual sort of soil, you know, function. So whereas you're right, if we're just going to look at overall levels of organic matter or organic carbon in the soil, they do change slowly. There are fractions of that organic carbon which we can manage and improve quite quickly. An example would be the most soluble form of carbon within the soil. And when we measure that, we tend to describe that as being active carbon. And that's the microbial pool of simple carbon forms, mainly things like carbohydrates, that are available for as a food source for your soil microbes. And that very much can be influenced by the delivery of carbon through root exudates into that rhizosphere to support that surrounding biology. And that can happen very, very quickly with the establishment of green cover, so the use of cover crops, overwinter greening, things like that. So we can get a very positive early change. And we see those kind of indicators as sort of being, if you like, the first responders in soil health. You know, yes, you won't see a change in your organic matter levels overall for many, many years. But if you are providing a food source to that soil ecosystem through your crop management, through your residue management, through your manure management, then you will see that very, very quickly in your soil test results. We tend to think of the biological tests we offer, the active carbon, the respiration tests. They're a little bit like the canary in the mine. You know, they will pick up what we can't see and tell us, are we making improvements? Are we going in the right direction? Are our regenerative practices having that sort of nature positive effect that we want?
What I'd also say is that whilst it takes time to see changes in soil carbon, soil organic matter, once you do start to see trends, quite small differences are very worthwhile. You know, so small differences in the percentage of soil organic matter in the soil translate to very big, many tons and tons of carbon per hectare increase. So the actual impact on soil sequestration across your field or your whole farm are massive. You know, so the patience is needed to sort of start to see trends that you can trust, but you know, they're worthwhile in the long run. And I think in order to sort of increase the likelihood of seeing those sorts of trends, I think it's important to make sure you're consistent with the testing that you do. So you test at a similar time of the year each year. You're doing the same test. You're sampling to the same depth. You're sampling the same parts of a field. That will increase the chances of you seeing reliable trends through time and increase the sort of speed at which you pick up trends that you can rely on.
Pete mentioned their consistency, and I think it's important to consider this when we look at the methods of organic matter testing. There's two common methods of testing in use for organic matter and organic carbon, and they are loss on ignition, and that's sometimes abbreviated to LOI, and Dumas combustion, and both have their advantages and their disadvantages. And I think it might be useful to just quickly run through those two different methods. So loss on ignition, a very simple process. In essence, the soil is dried, then weighed, then burned. And basically the weight loss that occurs at high temperature indicates the organic matter of the soil. So if the soil loses 5% of its weight upon burning, we can assume it was 5% organic matter. So it's simple, it's straightforward, it's relatively quick to process, and it's relatively low, low price point. And it's very good for organic soils, very good for determining trash levels, but it's very poor or can overestimate organic matter content on heavy clays and chalky soils for various reasons. Dumar combustion, on the other hand, that again involves burning the soil at high temperature, but this time it's burned in an oxygen-rich environment. So as the soil burns, the organic carbon combusts, and that evolves off as carbon dioxide. And we can measure how much carbon dioxide is being lost through infrared spectroscopy. So we're getting a direct measure of the carbon. So it's much more accurate. And it also gives us a very useful bonus. It gives us the carbon to nitrogen ratio. And that goes back to measuring changes in soil and early identification of changes in soil, because carbon to nitrogen ratio in your soil is a very important soil health metric, because it gives us indications on the rate of carbon cycling. If the carbon to nitrogen ratio starts to decline, that's an indicator that carbon has been cycled or lost faster than it's been accrued. Conversely, if our carbon to nitrogen ratio is increasing, that's a sign that that soil carbon is being built or sequestered. But we must take care that it isn't being built at a rate where the soil is becoming so overloaded with soil carbon, or the soil biology here, I'm thinking, is becoming so overloaded with organic carbon that the result ultimately is nitrogen immobilization and crop deficiency. So two different methods, different functions slightly, both acceptable for things like SFI and PSF schemes, but consistency, I would say, is should be considered. You know, if you've picked a method, try and stick to it, and that will help you plot those trends over time.
And no problems in terms of time scales as far as waiting for results and so on is concerned.
Last year, we did get several weeks behind on turnaround. One of the reasons for that was these Dumar combustion analyzers require helium to function. What I didn't realize was there was a world helium shortage for various reasons, and that sort of made our machines grind to a halt. But there's plenty of helium in the sheds now. We've plenty more machines, we've backup methods. Current turnaround time for soil organic matter testing at the labs is 3 or 4 days from sample arriving, so back to business as usual.
Well, I suppose advice like this has been handed out for nearly 300 years, since the days of the early improvers. And yet there are still farmers out there who avoid the kind of what they might call office work data handling involves. Are the current proposed changes for farming likely to persuade them to engage in the kind of things we've just been discussing?
Well, I think they definitely are, yes. And also, in addition to the changes that are coming, the prices of fertilizer as well. You know, it's so much more worthwhile at the moment to take the trouble to measure your soils and your crops, to help you to fine-tune the nutrient inputs that you're providing to your crops, because not only are they expensive anyway, but also they have a massive input on the sustainability of your cropping system.
And I suppose it helps if farmers get together and work on this together. I'm thinking of yield enhancement networks and other groups.
Definitely, yeah. We find a great value in being able to benchmark your crop nutrient analysis against other farms, just to see where you sit in the bigger sort of scheme of things. And our Yen Nutrition Service that we operate allows farmers to benchmark their grain nutrient analysis against other farms. And if you're sort of in the bottom 25%, you kind of know that there's probably something not quite right there. And you need to have a closer look at that particular nutrient or that particular crop. And that's what the Yen Nutrition Service provides to the farmer.
Yeah, I think the one thing that's refreshing to me is that a lot of this change and new policy, legislation, incentives, they're all environment-based. They're all positive incentives to me, because we are all faced with an environmental challenge. It's a universal challenge. It's there for all of us.
So, Pete, how do you sum up your advice to those listening?
Yeah, I mean, the adage of you need to measure to manage has never been more apt, really, especially for managing your nutrients to your crops. So we're a great believer at ADAS that measuring the soil in conjunction with measuring the grain and the tissue all work together, really, to give you the full picture of what your crop needs. And, you know, over the last few years with our Yen Nutrition Service and measuring the concentration of nutrients in the grain, it's looking like a really useful way of estimating whether your crop had enough nutrients or not. So, you know, try and find the time at harvest time. I know it's terribly busy. It's a very, very hectic season, this one as well, with the wet weather. Finding time just to be able to sample some of that grain from individual fields and send it off to the labs, get it analysed for its nutrients, will pay dividends.
And for you, John?
Yeah, I agree with everything Pete just said. You know, I would just say encourage people to engage with analysis in a positive manner, you know, rather than just using it as a troubleshooting tool. Use it routinely to make good crops even better crops, good yields even better yields, you know, and no matter where you are in the crop calendar, we can help you, be it soil, be it manure testing, be it leaf testing, produce testing, grain testing, and so on. But also remember about that synergy between the soil and the plant. You know, we talked about those different pools of carbon feeding our soil ecosystem. So think about going just beyond organic matter testing to fulfill some of those new policy requirements and use some of the more insightful biological tests that are now available. And finally, just let us help you. You know, Yara have got many tools to help assist with the nutrient management, from tractor mounted end sensor, handheld end testers, satellite imagery interpretation and nutrient management tools. And so please visit our Yara's at farm website for more details of those. There's the tank mix tool to check foliar compatibilities, and there's the new Megalab portal where you can organize all things analytical. And finally, come and talk to us. We're always more than happy to try and help, and you'll find all the laboratory contact details on the yara.co.uk website.
Thank you, John Telfer, Business Manager with Yara Analytical Services. And thanks too to Dr. Pete Berry of ADAS. Clearly, we're going to see a much sharper focus on testing and collecting data in the coming years. It's obviously up to all of us to become more data savvy. I'm Ken Rundle, and I'll be back with another podcast in a couple of weeks' time. Join me then.
Thanks for listening to Yara's Grow the Future podcast. For more information, visit yara.co.uk or yara.ie.